CSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
Step up and set the tone.
All the time. A division of Bell Media. CSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hot Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio. Why are you guys already giggling? Joined in studio by my good friends Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Michael Remus is operating the R-Desk over at IllegalCurve.com and our Twitter page at IllegalCurve. And producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. Gentlemen, Richard, Ezra, good afternoon.
How's it going? We're just so happy to be, you know, back on the air at our regular 12 to 3 slot. We're just happy. I couldn't be more happy.
You're just a happy-go-lucky kind of guy.
And, I mean, New Jersey Devils back in the finals, going for their fourth Stanley Cup. Anybody who's listened to the show knows that I've loved the Devils for 15 years. It's a great story. And I might as well take this opportunity to mention that I was perfect. 2 for 2. Yep. Picked the Kings in 5 and Devils in 6. No big deal. Last 2 rounds, I'm 5-1.
Yeah, I know. I've accordingly have stockpiled cans and made arrangements for the apocalypse.
Yeah. Yeah. The only problem is
Mayans were right. 2012 is going to be a very scary year.
I'm not a betting man, so I haven't won any money. But that's not what it's about. It's about being a good analyst.
It's about the glorification of your good name.
It's about the glorification of my good name because, you know, God knows it's taken hit over the last 3 years. So it's time to, make amends.
Yeah. Richie?
Well, what else do you say to that? As he comes in and goes 2 for 2, Kings in 5 and Devils in 6. He certainly beat me in his predictions. I had the Kings in 6 and the Rangers in 7.
I think we need to pass over the mantle of expert on the show from Richard to Ezra. I think Ezra's the new expert, and Richard, you're now the comedy sideshow.
Well, we should also mention we all went 4-4 in the first round because the first round I didn't pick the Kings to beat the Canucks, but we'll get to our predictions a little bit later. But the way the LA Kings have performed in the first 3 rounds, it's incredible, knocking off the top 3 seeds. Even though I like the Devils, it's going to be tough to not pick the Kings. I'm teasing you a little bit here, but it's going to be a really good Stanley Cup final. We didn't expect this at all. No one predicted this year, especially the way these two teams played throughout the year. But, it's a nice final here. It's going to be a good one, I think.
And we're going to spend a lot of time on the Stanley Cup final as we go through the program today. 3 guests for you this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show coming up in about 25 minutes' time at the bottom of the hour. Carey Fraser from TSN is going to join us coming up at 1 o'clock this afternoon from the Los Angeles Times. Helene Elliott is going to join us. And then coming up at 2:15 from the Vancouver Province, Ben Kuzma is going to join us. You can contact us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can contact us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And of course, the website is www.IllegalCurve.com. Before we look ahead to the Stanley Cup final, let's look back at last night's Game 6. Devils knocked off the Rangers, of course, in overtime on the strength of the Adam Henrique goal. When you look at the series as a whole and you look at last night, it just seems to me that, despite John Tortorella's protestations to the contrary, the Rangers simply were a tired team and they couldn't handle the depth that the Devils threw at them on a game-in, game-out basis.
I think that the Devils won, they won the majority of the periods. And if you're looking at it on that basis, the Devils were the better team and deserved to win. One of the reasons for that was the Devils were, again, very well prepared and their players played at an exceptional level. I think, as Drew mentioned, the fact that the Rangers, and we talked about this last week, the wear and tear and the style that they play wasn't serving them well, I think. And I made the point last week, the goal is to win the Cup. If you're looking at it round by round, if you're a lower seed team, you just try and get round by round. But when you're the first overall seed in the Eastern Conference, the goal is to win the Cup. And you have to wonder if the system that they were playing was conducive to making a long enough run to win the Cup. Meaning, it seemed to me they got tired in this round. What would have even happened next round, rest or not? If they were to have won, right, they would have played, I think, Sunday and then
Wednesday
and then probably started the Stanley Cup final on Saturday.
No,
Yes, if the Rangers would have won, Sorry, they would have played on Sunday, and then Wednesday.
The Cup would have started Wednesday.
Right, think about that. So they would have had 2 days rest and then had to fly 5 hours. LA would come to them, but then they'd be doing the travel of 5 hours back and forth. Okay? So
the numbers bear it out, to your point right now, the numbers bear it out that in order to be successful and to make it all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals, you need to have one of your first three series be a quote-unquote easy series. Right. The Rangers played seven against the Senators. They played seven against the Caps. You look at the Devils. They played seven against the Panthers, and then they only played five against the Flyers. And then never mind the Kings, who've only played one game over the minimum to get to this point. Pardon me, two games over the minimum to get to this point. It bears it out that you need at least one series to be quote-unquote easy in order to have enough in the tank to get there.
LA almost also lucked out in the sense that they played Vancouver, stayed in the same time zone, played St. Louis, you know, obviously you moved to the central time zone, but not across to Detroit or somewhere like that, and then you played Phoenix, which is a short jaunt. So for a team that has a lot of travel, they didn't really have to do as much travel as one may think. If you listen to Wayne Gretzky's comments, speaking about comparing this year's team to the 93 team, he said by the time they got to the final, and obviously they were in a legal curve short of maybe winning that cup, but by the time they got to the final, the travel had worn them out. Remember, they were traveling back and forth from Toronto.
Right. Because Toronto was in the Western Conference back then.
Exactly. So,
and didn't they play Detroit earlier in those cup finals in 93?
I don't remember. Maybe Remus can check that out. But there was a lot of travel associated with that. So taking that into account, LA's maybe is more, not only have they played fewer games, they had a pretty easy schedule in terms of travel based upon the fact that they're located in Southern California.
Right, and I don't think we can take anything away from the Los Angeles Kings. They have been dominant. They've dispatched three teams quite easily. They've won 12 games and lost two. They haven't lost on the road. That's really impressive, no matter how you look at it. But, you know, having said that, you know, they've gotten lucky in certain round, every round. Daniel Sedin was injured in the first round. That's a huge blow to the Vancouver Canucks. The St. Louis Blues had the injury to Halak. The Phoenix Coyotes are not a very good team, and you get a good if you want to play one team in the conference finals, it's probably the Phoenix Coyotes. Even though they were the third seed, you're getting a favorable matchup there, and that's why I picked the Kings in five, because the way the Kings had dispatched the Blues with the rest, I just knew that the Coyotes weren't going to be able to handle the Kings. But, you know, going into the finals, this team, it's tough to find major flaws with this team. I look at the way Drew Doughty's playing, and I look at the way the entire defense is playing, the way Jonathan Quick has been fantastic during the regular season and the playoffs. They're going to be tough to beat. And we're going to talk to Helene Elliott a little bit later about the Devils' aggressive forecheck, and, you know, she mentioned to us, we did a pre-recorded interview, and, you know, they're also an aggressive forechecking team, and as far as I'm concerned, this is going to be a pretty close series, a little bit more high-scoring than the LA Phoenix series. But, you know, Drew, it's even though they got some favorable matchups, I mean, the LA Kings are playing their A-plus game right now, and Andre Kopitar and Dustin Brown are the two best forwards in the playoffs, with maybe the exception of Ilya Kovalchuk and Parise right now. But, you know, they're going to be tough to beat for the Devils. They present different challenges than the Rangers. As far as the Rangers are concerned, I just don't think they're aggressive enough, and they got behind to the Devils every game, I believe. I don't think they had the lead in the first period of any game, and the second period was their best period. The only game that I thought the Rangers outplayed the Devils was Game 5, and the Devils were lucky to win Game 5.
Sure.
You look at this, I mean, the way John, you mentioned it, the way John Tortorella built this team and the strategy that he built it under.
I don't know so much, Drew, if that's the case. I don't think the team was built for that strategy as much as John Tortorella just instilled that strategy in the team.
That would you argue then that that's a coaching error on his part?
Somewhat, I think, yeah. I do.
I mean,
he didn't allow his offensive players to maybe be as offensive as they're capable of being. He also, what he did, and we talked about this all season long. I said on the show, the Rangers need to add a veteran defenseman. How many times did I say that?
Well, you pinpointed Ron Hainsey on the Jets as being a potential guy that the Rangers should have gone after.
Now you see there's cap ramifications, but look at this team. They didn't play Stu Bickel.
They played four defensemen.
They brought in Emminger. They hardly played Strawman, and obviously Sauer was hurt. They played four defensemen for three rounds. No kidding they got tired. No kidding Delzotto made an error last night. No kidding they were severely worn down. You can't do that. Not only can you really not do that, you can't do that playing the style you're playing again. So and that was an error on Glenn Sather's part, to not add a defenseman.
And it is a young defense, Drew. I mean, you're talking about guys Mark Stahl, you know, he should be on the 2014 Canada Olympic team. He's great. I really like Michael Delzato. But you're right. In this series, Devils and Rangers, I mean, the Devils were all over the Rangers from the beginning. The fourth line was causing them all types of problems. The fourth line of the New Jersey Devils isn't, I think they've been great, they're not going to cause the Kings the type of problems that they caused the Rangers. You're talking about the Kings, Slava Voynov, Drew Doughty, you know, Willie Mitchell makes a good first pass. I think that that line's not going to be as effective, but, you know, credit to Pete DeBoer. He kept putting out the fourth line, and they were taking advantage of a tired Rangers defense. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding. Ryan Carter had three goals this series. That line, I believe, had five or six goals in the series. I mean, five or six goals from your fourth line is pretty impressive when the Rangers aren't even getting that from their top line.
Well, we said it last week. Pete DeBoer is able to play six defensemen for a large chunk of the series, and he's able to roll four lines for a large chunk of the series. They're playing, and whereas the Rangers are rolling three lines and only four defensemen. I mean, that's really a significant degree of difficulty that the Rangers have to overcome in order to win the series. And at push comes to shove, they just couldn't do it. I mean, Henrik Lundqvist looked tired. You know, that Game 5 loss... Those goals.
Yeah, he looked tired.
He looked
obviously.
Tired, but I mean, it makes sense. All year long, he's been, you know, they've been playing this style, and this style wears on you.
They wrote him all year long, exactly.
The style simply—it's just not. It's one thing to play this style if you have a ton of depth,
right?
But it's another thing if you're short.
I don't think you play this style if you think you have a ton of offensive depth, at least. I mean, again, Don Tortorella was coaching Tampa Bay when they won the Cup in 2004, and they didn't play this style. And I mean, you look at the defense they have, and they have, Girardi's more of a muck it up kind of guy. But Stahl moves the puck pretty well, though he's not the same player he was before the concussion. Delzato and McDonough skate beautifully and move the puck really well. You know, and Richards and Gabrick and Hagelin add speed, and Callahan and Dubinsky. Dubinsky was obviously awful this year, and Stepan had his, had his spurts. But to me, they didn't have to play the way they did. And, they obviously have issues that they need to address. And I think, like, for example, Tortorella, with a team that maybe was lacking scoring holding on to guys, and he would bench guy like Chris Kreider because of one defensive error. I think he miscalculated on a number of fronts.
Especially, you know, you look at a guy like Marion Gabrick, who is going to get a lot of flack for his performance and his lack of offensive performance. You know, the guy's so concerned about what he's doing on the back end, and we've spoken about this. He's so concerned about what he's doing on the back end that inevitably it's going to affect what he's doing in the offensive zone. You know, put your best players or put your players in a position to succeed where they're the best at. Marion Gabrick is the best on the team, you know, at scoring goals.
You pay him to score goals. So instead of benching him, what about playing him like three shifts in a row? You know, remember like Kinnan did with Alexei Kovalev? You challenge your players like that. And get him into a groove.
Get him into the feeling of the game.
I also think Tortorella, again, you know, he's... It's just so different than every other coach you see these days. I like the emotion that he expresses, but I think sometimes he's very disrespectful in the way he does it. Like, the cameras catch him just yelling and going at players. And I think, I'm not sure how long that lasts anymore. Especially if you don't win. Now, they got to the conference finals and they finished first in the Eastern Conference. So let's, first of all, set that out because that's a great accomplishment. But this team is built to win now. I mean, Brad Richards isn't skating as well as he did a couple years ago.
And there's only another 9 years left on the contract.
And he's never been a defensive dynamo. But you have guys like Gabrick and Richards who are at the tail end of the... They can still be productive, but... You know, a guy like Gabrick who relies on speed in the shooting, those guys fade off quickly. To me, they usually fade off more quickly than guys like Richards who can get along by passing and doing all that stuff. So you're really built to win now is what I'm saying.
And we'll talk much more about the New York Rangers when we do their postmortem a little bit later on in the show. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to start our Stanley Cup Finals breakdown. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Before we get any further into the program, I just want to say briefly that this we've dedicated this program to the memory of our good friend that we lost earlier this week, Dr. Richard Tapper. He passed away. We're going to talk more about Dr. Tapper later on in the show, but this week's episode of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is dedicated to the memory of Dr. Richard Tapper. Guys, looking forward to the Cup Final coming up. Starts Wednesday in New Jersey. You got the Kings, you have the Devils, two teams that played each other earlier this year, twice, in fact.
In October.
Within the span of about a two-week period, they played each other.
The Devils got a shutout in there.
That's just it. I mean, you know, you can look back and you see the Devils won both games, but it's a completely different Los Angeles Kings team that they're playing against.
I mean, that would be assuming that if the coaches were the same, it would have anything to do with it anyways. I don't think so, but especially the fact that the team is different. There was no Carter. There was no Daryl Sutter.
There was no confidence.
Not that. And yeah, Mike Richards, I mean, played well, I think, at the beginning of the season there, but the team hadn't really come together. So I would put little to no credence in that.
Which is interesting. So you look at these two teams, and, you know, both, you know, we hear it, it's the new mantra in the NHL nowadays, is you need depth up the middle.
Yep.
And really,
but it is, but I don't know why it should be so new.
Well,
Stanley Cup champions over the past 50 years.
Maybe not new. Maybe it's just now in vogue to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like net front presence. Net front presence is really just going to the net. I mean, it's not a new, it's a new term that I guess Pierre Maguire created. It's not a new concept. There's nothing genius about it.
The game is pretty much, you know, there's not that many new concepts you can introduce to the game when the game hasn't fundamentally changed that much. But you look up down the middle, and there's one guy that who's sort of flying under the radar because he missed a sizable chunk of the playoffs so far.
Okay.
Jakob Josefsson on the Devils.
I'm glad you brought him up.
Okay.
I'm glad you noticed that they brought him back in the lineup.
Well, he's been injured, and he just came back
last year.
He came back in time for game five.
That's right.
And his presence gives the Devils that extra depth centerman that I think they had been missing, because Peter Sikora, for as good of a year as he had, was playing just looked like he had run out of gas at this point.
Well, there's a couple things. I really am glad you brought that up, because the reason why Steven Gionta was in the lineup was because Jakob Josefsson got injured. Mm-hmm. We talked to Matt Lachlan about that last week. The fourth line's been great. But they made the decision to bring Josefsson back. And it was interesting that they decided to go with him, because Adam Larson hasn't been in the lineup, and they chose Peter Harold, and they decided that they liked Harold and they wanted to keep that roster spot open for Josefsson. And he's the type of guy that definitely can have an impact up the middle. He's a guy that would have been a regular with the Devils this year. He was on the team last year, and he kind of struggled early last year. But he's a good player. He's a guy that had the experience in Sweden, and he's the type of guy that'll go in the corners. He's got a good shot. He's got decent speed. He's got playmaking skills. And I thought he was really good in the final two games of the Rangers-Devils series. So, you know, he's had an impact. And, you know, you talk about the center ice position, and Richie's right. I mean, the center ice position is anyone that's played hockey knows that the center ice position has to cover the most ice. It's usually the best player on the team plays center for most of the time. But you look at these two teams, and, you know, I think the LA Kings are going to present a tough challenge for the Devils. Yep. And that's why I'm leaning towards the Kings winning the series, just for the fact that they are slightly stronger at every position. I think you got to give the edge to Jonathan Quick in that, even though Marty Brodeur, for sure, at 40 years old, has played. You guys know how much I love Marty Brodeur, and he's been fantastic. But Jonathan Quick is, you know, had a Vezina-like season. If he doesn't win it, Lundqvist will win it, and he'll be the runner-up. But, you know, I look at the defense and the way they've played. Drew Doughty is playing unreal. You know, people might be looking at his point totals, and he might not have 20 points. He might not be, you know, getting the points that Scott Niedermayer had back in 2003 for the Devils, but he's improved defensively. And you look at, you know, how he reacted in that fifth game against Phoenix. You know, he was passionate when he got that penalty, and it was a bad penalty. We were talking about that off air. But, you know, Drew Doughty is playing some of the best hockey I've ever seen him play, maybe with the exception of the 2010 Olympics.
Yeah.
But, you know, the New Jersey Devils, they've got Zajac up the middle. They've got Henrik up the middle. I mean, you know,
allowing them to put Elias on the wing helps them a lot.
Absolutely. He's not a natural center, and he was playing that center position because they didn't have Josefsson. And, you know, some of the other guys that they had in there didn't work out. But, you know, it's funny, you know, the New Jersey Devils haven't been given a lot of credit. And, you know, when the Philadelphia Flyers dispatched the Pittsburgh Penguins, it's tough to not like them. But you look at the way that they can switch these lines. And what they've done is they've taken Zajac and Parise. Oh, pardon me. No, they've taken Parise and Zubras, and they've basically switched them on the top two lines and given Henrik the number one line center role. And Adam Henrik has flourished. As far as I'm concerned, he would be my candidate for the Conn Smythe Trophy. He wins two series in overtime. And he's been unreal. He's really stepping into a frontline role. But the fact is, you could really have Zajac on that top line. As far as I'm concerned, New Jersey has two top number one lines.
Well, that's where they get matched by LA, because they have Richards and Kopitar. Back on Josephson, I think his speed is a huge element, because he can get in on the forecheck, something that we will talk about later, because the Devils' forecheck has posed problems for every team they've faced thus far. Up the center depth, as you mentioned, you know, Zajac and Henrique, and Zajac is skating a lot better than he did when he came back from his injury. Henrique has tremendous speed. That's no question. There's no question about that. Josephson's a very good skater as well. Ryan Carter's a big body. So up the middle, you have a good mix of skill, speed, size. You know, because Zajac's a bigger guy. When you look at the LA center position, you have Kopitar with size. And skill. You have Richards, not the biggest guy, but obviously aggressive enough and good skill. Stoll is a slower skater, really good on the face-offs, on draws, and a really good slap shot. So you're looking at, you know, when you look at the top three versus the top three, it's an interesting contrast. If you had to pick one, you'd pick LA, but not by a ton. I think, as he's pointed about, Adam Henrique is well taken, because Henrique, to me, I've said this off-air before, to me, he's a more in-control and more highly skilled Matthew Lombardi. And I think his skating and ability to do things at a high speed allow him to have the opportunities to score big goals like he has in the playoffs thus far. Not necessarily, as those goals haven't necessarily resulted from that, but the point is that he's able to create offense from that. Josephson will allow them to put pressure. Josephson is a far better skater than Peter Sikora. And, you know, okay, he's a better skater, but is he more skilled? Well, he's probably not more skilled. But if they're going to get the puck in deep and get it on the forecheck, then Josephson's speed is going to be a huge element to that. And he also, when you pair him with a guy like Ponikarovsky with some size, they have a nice mix. So the Devils are pretty deep up front, which we've mentioned throughout the season. I think the Kings' third line here is going to be an issue.
Third line that has had a ton of success, especially against the Coyotes. Dwight King.
Yeah, it's had a ton of success. Trevor Lewis, and you have Jared Stoll. I don't think it's as good as it's been playing. And I think it'll be interesting to see how they perform now, whether Simon Gagné comes back. He's been skating, but he's expected not to return.
That's right.
I think both teams, the key is going to be very much, you know, well, I think one of the keys for LA is getting out of their zone and creating speed through the neutral zone, because the Devils are aggressive. So one key will be whether the Kings turn the puck over against the Devils' aggressive neutral zone pressure, and will it result in chances? Another thing I think is, you know, how do the Devils' defensemen handle the LA Kings' forwards, and then how do the Kings' forwards handle the Devils' forecheck? The Kings have a very good defense, and I really like the mix. But guys like Willie Mitchell, I mean, they're not the most fleet of foot. Matt Green can be beaten a foot race, and lots of times what we talk about later in the show is the Devils like to put the puck in deep and chase it.
Right. We have a full... let me just jump in here. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, but we have a full segment coming up a little bit later on in the program about how the Devils' forecheck and why it's been so effective so far, in the regular season and in the playoffs as well.
And the Kings like to... And, you know, conversely, the Kings like to control the boards in the offensive zone, and the Devils on the back end, I mean, I think... whether Henrik Talinder gets back or not is going to be a key, because he's big and strong and he can handle the boards. But guys like Andy Green can be taken, you know, a guy like Peter Herald can be taken advantage of. I think, again, as we talked about in the Philly series with the bigger lineup, Adam Larson may check back in. But I think guys like Bryce Salvador and Volchenkov are big enough and tough enough to handle the Kings guys down low. So I don't think this is an easy... I know LA is the more talented team and LA is the pick, and I'm probably going to pick Los Angeles. But I don't think it's as easy, and I think the Devils have proved it's not as easy. We also haven't even discussed as the goaltending, and you mentioned Jonathan Quick being a great goaltender.
Hold that thought. We're going to talk about. We're going to do a second segment on the Cup preview a little bit after Carey Fraser. So hold that thought on the goaltending for now. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to bring Carey Fraser on from TSN, and then we'll continue on with our discussion of the Stanley Cup Finals preview. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Little Money City Maniacs.
Isn't that Sloan?
Yeah. Money City Maniacs.
I don't get the connection.
That's the song.
Oh, is that the name of the song? I didn't know it was called that. As you can see, I'm a big music fan.
You're sleeping. It's time to wake up.
You're lucky. I knew it was Sloan. That's an impressive enough
great band.
Yeah, it's an impressive enough accomplishment on my part. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Carrie Fraser from TSN is going to be joining us momentarily. Remember that you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know him from TSN and the Hey Ref segment. Carrie Fraser, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Carrie, are you there?
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Good to speak with you.
Likewise. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. Carrie, we want to start back almost a week ago now. The Kings Coyotes, the end of the Kings Coyotes series, really the big play right before the goal, the overtime winner, was Dustin Brown's hit on Michael Roosevelt. From your expert opinion, did you think that was a legal hit, or do you think that should have been a penalty?
No, I didn't like the hit at all. I know what Dustin Brown was attempting to do. He was trying an upper body hit, but when he approached and set himself up for the check, his left leg was extended outside of his foundation. His feet were a little bit wider on the left side than shoulder width apart. I know he was making a turn, but the end result was that the knee contact was simultaneous with and as severe as the upper body contact, and I would have called a two-minute knee penalty on that particular play. Had I seen it from an angle or down the blue line. It was a tough call to catch because obviously there was an offside just prior to the whistle had blown just fractionally before the contact. So the referees would need to have a good line on that to see his leg stuck out prior to contact.
Carrie, in Game 5 of the New Jersey Devils-New York Rangers series, Marian Gaborik scored early in the third period. And right before that, Marty Brodeur went out and to play the puck, and he kind of hesitated a little bit. And to me, it looked like he played the puck outside of the trapezoid. His stick was in the area outside of the trapezoid. Now, to me, the play should have been called dead. And I hope I'm not putting you on the spot right now, but should that play have been blown dead prior to that time goal being scored?
Yeah, anytime the goalkeeper touches the puck outside of the trapezoid, that is a penalty. And it would be a delayed penalty unless he knocked the puck away in that instant. The penalty would be delayed. Arm would go up. And if the New Jersey Devils had immediately gained possession, whistle would have blown. Marty Brodeur did that similar kind of play in the Philadelphia series and wasn't called for it. And it was the game that we had some excitement with Claude Giroux. Seeing that Martin Brodeur had touched the puck outside the trapezoid, we see him yelling at the official and then immediately went on the attack and hit Darius Zubras with a shot to the head and ended up with a one-game suspension in the final game of that series.
Kerry, are you in favor of the trapezoid rule? Were you in favor of it when it came in, and do you think it's a rule that should stay in the game?
I really wasn't in favor of it because I think it penalizes goalies like Martin Brodeur and others that develop a skill. It's a tremendous skill set that I saw. Ron Hextall was the first goalkeeper that I can recall that could really pass a puck. And I was part of a meeting with general managers back in the 80s when they were discussing protection of the goalkeeper. It was a summer meeting. Every general manager agreed that goalkeepers were an endangered species or a valuable commodity on their team and couldn't be easily replaced. They needed special protection. Glenn Sather, who was the general manager of the Edmonton Oilers at the time, was the only one that dissented. He said, guys, if we allow a guy like Ron Hextall to handle the puck without being touched, he handles the puck better than most defensemen in the league, and that was true. It is a skill that is developed, and most of the goalkeepers now are developing that skill, but they're handcuffed because of the trapezoid.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Carrie Fraser from TSN.
Carrie, throughout the year in the National Hockey League, there was concern over maybe the treatment of star players. And we've seen in the National Football League, amongst other leagues, you know, the protection maybe of those star players. Was there ever an edict handed down by the NHL while you were a referee to protect star players?
No, there was never an edict handed down, but of course, Star players generally had the puck most of the time, where the puck followed them, and of course they garnered added attention. Sometimes Mario Lemieux would have two guys on him, and oftentimes three players that would try to check him. Mario developed a tactic which is really creative and unique. He would have his players assembled in a huddle, and then he would skate into the huddle and shoot out the back door and entrap the checkers that were assigned to try and keep him in, at bay. It was a great tactic. It was the first time I ever saw it. The fact that those players bring attention to themselves and have the puck a lot of times, they're in foul potential. Players have to foul them to contain them. And especially in the modern day where we see a lack of restraint and instruction, the referees have been directed, obviously, since the lockout to call that and remove it from the game.
Kerry, you mentioned the lockout. And since the lockout, we've seen penalties, you know, steadily decline. Why is that?
Well, I think it's a combination of things, guys. We have to give the players credit for developing the learning curve very quickly. There were players that pre-lockout relied heavily on the clutch and grab and restraint. Once we returned with a complete buy-in by players, coaches, general managers, and officials that the new rules had to be called, they had to be enforced, a lot of players were flushed out of the league. They couldn't compete in the faster game. I think that we give them credit for learning, but I also have always seen that players will get away with whatever the officials let them get away with. And I think there has been a slippage. We've seen it during this season and through an inconsistency that developed through a particular game and just sort of universal. We heard some players' public outcry that the obstruction was back and the restraining wasn't being called, and that was prior to the playoffs. Brooks Orpik was one from the Pittsburgh Penguins that spoke out, as did Henrik Sedin from Vancouver just prior to the playoffs. So I think that there is some legitimacy to their claims, and it really takes a monitoring process from the officiating department ongoing with each individual official referee as to what his standard is, and that he does remain on the league's expected standard.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Kerry Fraser of TSN. Kerry, we already asked you about the trapezoid earlier on in the interview. If there was one rule in the NHL that you could change, what rule do you think needs to be altered in such a way that that currently is detrimental to the game?
A bunch of rules in the book. I mean, we're 155 pages of rules. I think there's enough there. We just need to enforce them better. I think that the one thing that I would like to see, if it could be changed, is a philosophy and a mindset by players that they must keep their skates on the ice. The rule says if you leave your feet, it's charging. Quite often that's not called. We're looking for excuses for the big hit and that the player's skates left the ice at the point of impact or after impact. When you do that, when your skates leave the ice, all of your energy and velocity is going in an upward motion. When it goes in an upward motion, we're looking at a high hit and ultimately contact to the head can and usually result. So I would want to see the players forced to keep their skates on the ice. Alexander Ovechkin wasn't even in the New York Rangers series in about game five, I believe. Puck went through his skate. It was inside the Rangers zone. Dan Girardi was coming towards him. And Ovi, rather than play the puck, he lost the puck. There was separation, and he decided that he was going to make contact with Dan Girardi, and he was going to come out on top. And on top he did. He left his feet probably 8 to 10 inches, straightened his legs, and launched himself upward, and there was contact to Dan Girardi's head as a result. Ovechkin got a minor penalty. But once again, we want to get this head contact out of the game, and the first place to start is by keeping players' skates on the ice.
In the regular season, do you think that would have been a suspension?
No, I don't think so. I think Alexander Ovechkin let up on the play. He could have certainly buried Dan Girardi, and he didn't. So there was some conscious effort of the amount of force that Ovechkin was going to exert on that particular contact. But nonetheless, he was going to come out on top. He wasn't going to, from a self-preservation perspective, his mindset is, I'm going to go high, I'm going to go as hard as I need to, and I'm going to put the man down. And that's exactly what he did.
Kerry, anybody who watched Game 5 of the Kings-Coyotes series saw Drew Doughty absolutely lose his mind after a penalty was called on him. And, you know, if you could read lips, you probably could tell what he was saying. What's the line a player has to cross before getting that additional misconduct or unsportsmanlike penalty after he's already taken a penalty, knowing that in the playoffs, sometimes guys try to get away with a little bit more?
Well, Drew Doughty lost it twice, first on the penalty and then on the missed offside where he kept the puck inside the zone. I didn't like his stick swinging. He needs to really control himself in these finals because everything is ramped up in the finals, certainly the scrutiny and the media and the stakes. This is it. This is the final dance. So he's got to temper. He's a terrific player, but he's got to temper his emotion and put it in the right direction. I think the referees will give a player at that stage of a series and a game as much leeway as they possibly can. That one stretched the envelope, in my opinion. The natural progression of penalties, though, is not right to a misconduct. It's a minor penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct. I mean, of course, we were in overtime. The referee was lenient, was very kind in not assessing that second minor and a misconduct. And as we saw, it wasn't just one time, it was the second time. So there was no repercussion after his first episode. The second episode was a continuation of the first.
Gary, final question. When we were growing up, you had the names on the back of the referee's jersey, whether it be your own, Bill McCreary, Paul Dvorsky, Andy Van Hellen, and we could go on and on. Do you think it's time for the league to bring that back?
Well, I would like to see it back because there was a personality that each of us brought to the game. I know that the modern day philosophy from the head office is that they want the officials to just sort of blend in, more of a vanilla product. I think that may be well in theory, that you don't want to bring attention to the officials, but really what it does is the damage to relationships with players. A lot of times players would come to me, Shane Doan in particular, and say, what's the name of your partner tonight? I want to call him by his first name. Shane Doan, who went ballistic after the series and really out of character. I was disappointed in his comments, but I understand his emotion in the moment. But he's a player that recognizes that success in any industry results from relationship building, and he would like to be able to have conversations with officials and call them by name and get to know them a little bit from a professional perspective, and that just doesn't happen anymore when it's number so-and-so with a helmet and a visor, and you don't know who he is, and he doesn't often talk to you.
Kerry Fraser from TSN, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Come on, ref.
You can find more of Kerry's work on TSN, and of course, he was on throughout the regular season on the TSN panel.
Playoffs.
Yeah, and the playoffs as well. Kerry, thanks very much.
Pleasure, guys. Enjoy the final.
Take care. Thanks very much.
Thanks all, Kerry.
Right on. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Kerry Fraser from TSN joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break, and when we come back, we're going to continue discussing the Devils-Kings Stanley Cup Final. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Kerry Fraser for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview or any of the program, you can download it on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. This segment of the program is brought to you by our good friend David Carr of Monopoly Realty. I'll give you a couple seconds now. I'll just pause, let you get a pen and piece of paper to write down the one phone number that if you're either buying or selling your house is going to change your life. Hang on, wait a couple seconds. There you go. Phone number 230-6129. 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Give him a shout. Buying a house, selling a house, you don't want to leave that decision to an amateur. David is a professional through and through. He will get your house sold or get you into a new home. David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129.
Drew, I know you want to get into continuing our preview of the upcoming Stanley Cup Finals, but I got to say, What a treat to have Carey Fraser on, listening to him talk. And I think that's the first referee, former referee, we've ever had on the show. But, you know, listening to him talk.
Ezzy, I was a former referee.
Oh, that's right. But you're the host, so you're not a guest. But, no, that was a great interview. You know, Carey provides great insight, you know, always on TSN and a good voice of the game.
Well, as you know, your friendship with Drew is very well may have been forged based on your impression of Drew wanting to ref.
That's right.
We're not friends.
Yeah, it's been a lie. I don't know if we can carry it on. Get that pun? Carry it on.
Do you remember that time at the cabin where we made Drew wear the refing uniform all weekend?
I wasn't there for that, but I heard that was good times.
Richie, that was a little awkward now, as he wasn't invited that weekend.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Let's get back to the Stanley Cup Finals. We left off talking about goaltending. So, goaltending, you have the hotshot youngster, Jonathan Quick.
Not that young.
Well, I know he's not that young, but compared to Marty Brodeur, he's a baby.
Oh, yeah.
Versus the grizzled veteran Marty Brodeur. You know, you look at the two matchups, and I mean, I think you'd be hard-pressed to argue that Quick is not the better of the two goaltenders at the moment. But, you know, how is Marty Brodeur's experience going to play an advantage in this Cup Finals?
I'll take this as the guy who's been obsessed with Marty Brodeur.
Currently has a Marty Brodeur poster above his bed.
His entire life, but... No, I mean, you know what impresses me the most about Marty Brodeur is the way that he's changed his style. And Marty Brodeur has always had a hybrid style. And if everybody knows, the guy who brought the butterfly style, really, or ushered it in with greatness, was Patrick Waugh. Brought in the there was obviously goalies before him. But that's kind of when the butterfly style, you know, broke in. And he's always been a stand-up goalie. Brodeur's an old-school goalie. And obviously he's not as fast anymore. If you've watched him these playoffs, he's had trouble with his wraparounds. And, you know, he's had trouble with that. But the thing with Marty Brodeur is he's still an excellent puck-handling goalie. He's got 4 assists in these playoffs. He can still add a dimension to the Devils' back end. Teams will purposely try not to dump the puck in at all on the New Jersey Devils, and really, you can't avoid the dump and chase is, you just can't avoid it. But Marty Brodeur is still an excellent puck-handling goalie, and even though Jonathan Quick, at this point in his career, is a better athlete and a better goalie, and we've talked about that all year, and to be honest with you, I think Jonathan Quick is underrated. I mean, you know, Roberto Luongo was talked about a lot last year. Tim Thomas was talked a lot about this year. And sure, Jonathan Quick gets mentioned, but, you know, he's an elite goalie. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, LA does have the advantage. But back to your question, what Marty Brodeur brings is experience at every level. I mean, he's won Olympic gold twice. I mean, he's won 3 Stanley Cups. He's been a guy that's played 60-plus games. Up until this year, it was 70-plus games. So he's not rattled. You know, a guy like Marty Brodeur, sure, he let in a bad goal in Game 5, and he didn't have his best game. But aside from that, he's been pretty good. He'll let in the odd weak goal. But Marty Brodeur's seen everything. And, you know, when he steps onto the ice, he's confident. And even though he might not be as quick as he once was...
Pardon the pun.
He's still got them this far. I mean, the fact that he's been their goalie for the last 18 years... And he was still able to get the Devils to this Cup Finals. I mean, he still got it.
Richie?
He's not a difference maker anymore, I don't think. As you know, the Devils cannot rely on him to be if they're going to win this series. As he mentioned, he brings experience, so you don't have that nervousness. And there is a nervousness, and there's a gap here. Remember,
Quick's never been in a Stanley Cup Final.
LA goes from being, you know, the underdog, the team, the Cinderella story, to walking in, having a week off, and now they're the favorite. Look at how it affected Nashville. Look at how it affected other teams. So the nerves...
Well, but they handled it pretty well against Phoenix last series.
There's no media pressure there. Nobody cares about Phoenix. It's irrelevant. I mean, people are going to cover the series. This is a Stanley Cup final. This is a series that people send. Like, for example, the Free Press is sending Gary to the finals. Did they send Gary to go see Phoenix in LA?
No.
Every paper sends somebody. It's a different story. And you're going in. You're the favorite. You're the hot shot. You're the team to beat now. New Jersey is still the Cinderella story. And you better, even though they had more points than LA, you better believe they're going to be riding that underdog way. That's a Lou Lamoriello way to do it. So Brodeur comes in and he's seasoned and there's no pressure for them. And he doesn't feel pressure even if there is. For Quick, he's been tremendous. He's been great. But will it change? Will talent win out? Because it's all about momentum in this playoffs, and momentum changes on a dime. So I do think, though, that it actually is an advantage for Los Angeles to start on the road.
I agree.
And less distractions, less pressure. You're cohesive as a team. You get out there. And the Devils really, while it was raucous in there for game seven, generally speaking, I mean, the fans are passionate, but it's not the hardest building to play in.
Well, especially if you're playing on the road, if you start on the road and you lose, you know, say you lose the first two games on the road, nobody usually, you know, the cliche is the series doesn't start until you lose a game at home.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So you lose on the road, you come back home, and as long as you take care of business at home, there's never really any added pressure. You know, it's one thing if you start at home and you, like Vancouver did, they lost that first game and they immediately had the weight of the world on their shoulders in that first round against LA.
Right, and they've knocked off all three top seeds, first team to ever do that,
yeah.
And they've yet to lose on the road. So for them, even though they might be the favorite, they've knocked off the Vancouver and they've knocked off Nashville, they've knocked off Phoenix, they might be the favorite. But they're still on the road, and New Jersey does have some momentum too. Knocking off New York was huge with everything that happened in 1994. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the favorite, you know, they might both like to relish the underdog role. But Richie's right. I mean, New Jersey, even though they have the home ice advantage, I would say aren't the favorite. I think most people are going to go with LA, and I myself included.
Think about it. I mean, sorry to interrupt there, Ezzy. I mean, Los Angeles hasn't had a lot of travel for Los Angeles, and they've had a lot of rest. Think about New Jersey's travel down to Florida, the beautiful weather. No, down to Florida for seven-gamer. Philadelphia.
Not easy, not difficult travel.
New York and Philly are right in their doghouse.
New York, they bus.
Yeah.
And Philly, they probably train. So they probably haven't been on a plane in a month and a bit.
Right. Yeah.
Advantage L.A.
Well, no, advantage.
Well, New Jersey.
There's nowhere in terms of
New Jersey's been able to spend every night in their own bed.
Every night in their own time zone.
Yeah, every night in their... See, I mean, not that LA... And
LA's had it easy for LA, but it doesn't mean they've had it as easy as
right.
New Jersey.
But I don't think that's an advantage for New Jersey, because now I think that they're going to have to travel. They're used to their nice little bus rides, to New York.
But LA hasn't jaunted all the way over to the Eastern time zone.
That's right.
So LA's playing... When LA's playing... In New Jersey, every game is 7 o'clock Central Time for the Stanley Cup Final.
That's 5 o'clock in Los Angeles when the games start.
Yeah. So it's interesting that also, like it was in Vancouver, they're going to start the games at 5 o'clock in LA. So you're starting early in your own city when you usually start later, although they do play afternoon games. And then you're starting, basically 5 o'clock in both places. 4 o'clock, excuse me. You're playing at 7. Oh, no, it's 8 o'clock on the East Coast. So you're playing at 5 o'clock in both places. It's a different body clock. I mean, these guys are very regimented. You don't know how that will affect them.
It's always something to factor in. Going back to goaltending for a second, you know, I like Marty Brodeur, and what he's done this playoffs is truly amazing.
Yep.
But I always have this feeling in the pit of my stomach that Marty's about to let in a softy.
And he has let in softy, so you're right to feel like that. I've watched, you know, the only guy that's probably watched more Devils over the last 15 years is probably Matt Lachlan and guys that work for the New Jersey Devils. But he's always had that problem.
Well,
and you look back, we've always talked about the Carolina
Hurricanes. That's exactly what I was going to bring up.
And, you know, those were soft goals. And Marty let in soft goals in Game 5. Game 5 was his worst game, but he was able to recover, and then they got the timely goals in the third.
Exactly. He's played for 20 years. When you play for that long, there are going to be times when you let in weak goals. And the best part of Marty Brodeur, and we can all agree on this, I'd assume, in this room, is that weak goals do not affect him.
Sure. Nope. He's seen everything and nothing. He's pretty unflappable at this point.
You don't last that long and play at that level if you're affected by bad goals. It's his ability to forget those or just not care that have contributed to his longevity. Not all of this game is physical, because he's a physical freak by playing this much, this often, for this long.
Okay.
But you cannot, if you don't have that mental capability of being able to deal with this and the ability to be fresh all the time, that's not only physically, that's mentally.
Sure.
I'm okay. I'm ready to go. And also, another thing, this will cement his legacy. This will tie him with Patrick Roy for Stanley Cup victories. But in reality...
If he wins.
Exactly.
If they win.
But if they lose, that thing doesn't hurt his legacy.
Oh,
no pressure on the guy.
He got to the Cup Final when he's 40. He's got nothing to lose here. Let's go around the table. Give me who's going to win... How many games, and what is the difference going to be? What's the difference-making point in the series to you?
We go to Karnak here first?
Sure, we'll go to Karnak the Magnificent.
Okay. You know, even though I'm a huge Devils fan, I'm taking the LA Kings.
How many games?
And I'm going to take the LA Kings. I was going to go seven. I'm going to go LA Kings in seven. I am going to go seven. And I think the difference is going to be goaltending, and I think the top line. I think Dustin Brown will end up winning the Conn Smythe. And I think Drew Doughty has been unreal. And I think the Kings' top two lines will outplay the Devils' forwards. And I just think that they're very good on the road, and they're gonna end up stealing some games in New Jersey.
I think that St. Louis and Phoenix both tried to engage Los Angeles physically, and I think that was a mistake. Even though it was probably their strength to their games, I think they were feeding into a strength of LA. I don't think New Jersey does that. I think New Jersey tries to stray away from that. And I think that makes the series long. I don't think New Jersey wins, because I do think that the goaltending, Berdur's been very good, but he's not Jonathan Quick, and I think LA is the more talented team. I think it's going to be a longer series. I think some people are probably going to pick LA in 5 or 6. I agree with Izzy. I think it's going to be LA in 7, but it's going to be hard fought. I'd say there's minimum 2 overtimes in the series.
I'll wrap it up. I'm wavering, and I think it's going to be 7. Mm-hmm. I think it's also going to be LA in 7. I know we're all uniform across the board here, but I think it's going to be a very hot, hard-fought series. I think it'll be an exciting series. This will not be, the Phoenix Nashville series here. This will be go with the strong forecheck that both teams like to implement.
I know it's not New York LA.
But New Jersey and LA is not a bad second.
Just think of the names, because all we really want is superstars.
That's right.
Doughty, Kopitar, Richards, Carter, Kovalchuk, Parise, Zajac, Brodeur, Quick. You got that.
There's a lot of storylines here.
Sorry to cut you off. It could have been a Phoenix Rangers final.
Yeah.
Now, Phoenix Rangers or LA Devils? I'll take the LA versus the Devils any day of the week.
LA and Devils simply for the quality of hockey you're going to see, because that would far exceed the Phoenix Rangers hockey, let me tell you. Let's go to break. When we come back, you're going to hear the interview that we conducted with Helene Elliott earlier this morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Earlier this morning, we were pleased to be joined and had the ability to interview Helene Elliott of the Los Angeles Times. Here is the audio from that interview conducted earlier this morning. We're pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Helene Elliott from the Los Angeles Times. Helene Elliott was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame in 2005 as the winner of the Elmer Ferguson Award, given annually by the Hockey Hall of Fame in recognition of distinguished members of the newspaper profession whose words have brought honor to journalism and to hockey. Helene, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for the intro. I was waiting for you to take a breath in there somewhere. That was a long sentence.
Well, when you have that many accolades behind your name, I have to get them all in there as appropriate. Helene, let's start with the sort of the Kings and the atmosphere in Los Angeles. You know, the Lakers are now out. The Clippers are now out. The Kings, have a lot of the sporting landscape to themselves now. Have they captured the imagination of the casual LA sports fan?
I think they have to a degree. I mean, it's never going to be like it would be if, say, the Winnipeg Jets went to the finals, or it wouldn't be like it would be in Toronto or Montreal. But as you say, without the Lakers and the Clippers to kind of take some of the attention away, yeah, I think people are looking at the Kings and going, they're still playing well. And they're a fun team to watch. And I kind of laugh when people say, low-scoring games are boring, and maybe some are, but I mean, the way this team plays isn't boring.
Helene, right near the trade deadline, there was the team acquires Jeff Carter and to play along with Mike Richards, and there's rumors that Dustin Brown is shopped for not a long period of time, but for a very short period of time before he was pulled off the market. Since then, it seems like the team's obviously come together. That much is evident. At this time, if you had to say there's one leader in the locker room, if you had to pick one player, at least one forward, would it be Dustin Brown or would it be Mike Richards?
Well, I think it's neither. I think it's everybody, frankly. I mean, I was talking to some people yesterday for a story I'm doing on Drew Doughty, and they were saying that he's become more vocal in the locker room. Brown doesn't yell or scream a lot, but when he says something, it has an impact. And when you have guys like Jarrett Stoll and Matt Green, who've been to the finals, and guys like Colin Fraser and Dustin Penner, who won the Cup, I mean, those guys, their voices have a lot of credibility, too. So I wouldn't say there's any one player who is the leader. I think it's really a lot of leaders, a lot of guys who hold each other accountable.
The people in Canada always get excited when they hear the name Wayne Gretzky, and he's said that he's going to be at Game 3 of the first home game for the Kings in the final. Has he kind of stayed away from the team to allow the team to kind of have its own spotlight and you know, get an identity of its own, and then just coming to support them in the final?
Yeah, I think that's certainly part of it, and I think, you know, his entanglement and his whole situation with the Phoenix Coyotes is still a sore point with him, and I certainly can't blame him. So I think he was not going to come around during the Coyotes series and start raising all those questions again. But, yeah, I think it'll be great. I'm sure he's going to get a huge ovation when they show his face on the screen and, you know, when they show him on TV and all. And I think it's going to be a great moment for hockey here and for him, I hope, too.
Aline, the Kings have played two series now against pretty non-aggressive trapping teams in the Phoenix Coyotes and St. Louis Blues. And we know that the Devils love their aggressive forecheck. How are the LA Kings planning on adjusting to that aggressive New Jersey Devils forecheck?
Well, I mean, the Kings are pretty aggressive on the forecheck themselves. So I don't really expect the Kings to do anything different, frankly. I mean, the one thing that Kings fans wish they would do different is maybe score a power play goal, a 5-on-4 power play goal. I don't expect them to do a whole lot different. I think you're going to see, obviously, the Kings centers are going to be very important here. You know, there might be, I don't know what he's going to do as far as matchups. I mean, they only found out last night that they're playing New Jersey. They haven't been, the practice hasn't started yet, so we haven't talked to Daryl Sutter or talked to any of the players. So I'm sure they have their plans in place, and they'll maybe tell us a little bit about them and won't give away any state secrets.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Helene Elliott of the Los Angeles Times. Helene, you just mentioned the power play, and it's been struggling in the playoffs, 5-on-4. And during the regular season, it was struggling, and then sort of things started to pick up a little bit when the team brought in Bernie Nichols as a consultant. Can you sort of let our audience know the kind of impact that Bernie Nichols has had on this squad?
Well, Bernie's really not involved in X's and O's very much. It's more a kind of a voice, another experienced guy who's been through it to kind of be the player's friend. I mean, you know, the coaches can't be the player's friends all the time. But Bernie has been a really good-humored, good-natured, calming presence. People respect him, obviously, for his career and what he's done. Players enjoy being around him and working with him. And he's certainly not standing up in the room and drawing diagrams on the board, you know, power play diagrams or anything like that. But it's more, you know, talking to players one-on-one and just the credibility he brings because of his terrific career.
Helene, you know, the Stanley Cup Finals is about storylines, and back in the summer of 2010, when Ilya Kovalchuk was an unrestricted free agent, there were two teams that were really hot in his heels, and that were the LA, you know, those two teams were the Los Angeles Kings and the New Jersey Devils. Obviously, as it happens, Kovalchuk opted to sign with the Devils, and that very well may have led to the acquisitions of Mike Richards and Jeff Carter. Has that been spoken about at all around the organization?
Well, again, you know, they only found out last night that it was going to be New Jersey. But, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of storylines here, obviously. Kovalchuk and, you know, talk to Kings fans, and they'll tell you it's a good thing they didn't get Kovalchuk for exactly some of the reasons that you mentioned. Also, you know, Kovalchuk this season had a terrific season, but last season, the 10-11 season, was not terrific. You know, it's funny how things work out, you know, plus one of the other storylines I'm intrigued by is, you know, Larry Robinson, Devils assistant coach, coached the Kings for four seasons. Four of their not very good seasons, they just didn't have very much to work with when Larry was coaching them, and look at the success he's had, and I think he's probably better suited as an assistant coach than he was as a coach here, certainly as a coach with the team that the Kings had back then.
Helene, we have to ask you about Dustin Penner. Obviously, you know, folks in Manitoba have a little bit of a soft spot for him. He's from Winkler, Manitoba. He obviously struggled this year with the Kings, but he's found a lot of success here in the playoffs. What's been the key, you know, to his success after he struggled so much in his earlier stint as a King?
Well, I mean, he had some problems off the ice. It's public. He went through a divorce and still may be going through it for legally. So, you know, that had to affect him. That did affect him. I mean, everybody has off-ice cares, or, you know, you're in your office and you bring, you know, your child is sick or your family situation is bad and you bring that to work and you know you shouldn't, but we're all human beings and that happens. But I think he's pulled out of that personally. I think putting him with Richards and Carter has been a terrific move strategically. You know, when you're playing on a line with Mike Richards and you see how hard Richards works and all the little things that Richards does, and it's almost kind of like, hey, wait a minute, that guy's working so hard, I better work hard too. And it's had a tremendously positive impact on Dustin Penner.
Helene, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, can you give our audience one reason why the Kings will win the series and one reason why they might lose the series?
They can win the series because of their goaltending and their penalty killing, because they have depth up the middle, because they can throw three really solid lines out there and a fourth line that's a good energy line. I think their defense is probably better than New Jersey's. I think that they can win the series if Drew Doughty plays the way he's been playing lately, and Dustin Brown and Ajay Kopitar continue to play the way they've been playing. As far as why New Jersey might win, look at Parise and Henrique and Kovalchuk. That's going to be an awful lot for the Kings to handle, and that's going to be the primary challenge, I think, is how do you shut down so many very good, very hot forwards.
Helene Elliott of the Los Angeles Times, thanks very much for giving of your time this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy the Stanley Cup.
Thanks. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Helene Elliott from the LA Times for joining us in that pre-recorded interview. In case you missed that interview or the one we conducted earlier with Kerry Fraser, be sure to download the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Continuing on with the two combatants in the Stanley Cup Final, which gets underway Wednesday night, the New Jersey Devils are sort of a unique team in that everybody thinks of the New Jersey Devils and they think of the old New Jersey Devils. The New Jersey Devils from the 90s and from sort of the early 2000s here, the trapping, slow, really, you know, detrimental to the viewership of hockey New Jersey Devils. Whereas nowadays, the style they play really could be nothing further from the truth. Mm-hmm. We've spoken about it a little bit in the past on this program. But, Richie, you wrote an article for a site you contribute to called thehockeywriters.com /overtime.
The site's called Overtime, yeah.
Pardon me, the site's called Overtime. It's brought to you by The Hockey Writers, where you've written for a while now.
Yeah, a couple of weeks, and it's being run by our friend Mike Colligan.
That's right. You hear Colligan on our program, well, throughout the regular season, for sure. Anyways, you wrote an article about the effectiveness of the New Jersey Devils' forecheck. Mm-hmm. So, you know, why don't we start going through the article and explain, you know, what is it that the Devils are doing forechecking-wise that makes them so unique in today's NHL?
Well, the Devils are a more aggressive team on the forecheck than many other teams, and it seems like, you know, over the past 10 years or so, even a little bit longer than that, a lot of teams are very hesitant to put three guys in deep on a forecheck, and they always have their third guy high. You know, the Minnesota Wild teams of the Jacques Lemaire days always had a third guy high, and generally speaking, that was the center. They like the center high, and that's, you know, effect.
High being in the zone.
High in the offensive zone, meaning right. Being able to get back and play defense.
More or hanging around the ring, where the ringette line
exactly.
would be, or where the top
exactly.
of the circle in that vicinity.
And if you're ever pinching in deep, then you have to be sure the other forward, one of the other two forwards on your team is rotating back to cover you. So the cycle would work as one guy is high at the ringette line, he'd come in deep to the cycle, and the guy who's coming along the boards on the cycle would cut back, would curl back and would cover for the third guy who's high.
So it would be sacrosanct to have anybody, and really three guys sort of around the crease and towards the goal line.
And a lot of forechecks you see in the National Hockey League these days are what's called a 2-1-2 forecheck, which is two forecheckers in deep on the puck, one guy high and then two defensemen back, or even a 1-2-2, which is one forechecker in deep, two guys, you know, one guy maybe trailing back and another guy trailing a little bit farther back, and then two defensemen. What the Devils do, though, is the Devils use their speed to their advantage, and we talked about this before. The Devils will put the puck in deep, and the first thing is they put the puck in deep, and what they do is they turn around the defenseman. So the defenseman has got to get in and race on the puck.
He's in a chase position now.
Chase position. So that's scary for a number of reasons. First of all, the goalie with the trapezoid rule can't play the puck if it's put into the corner. Okay? And if he's going to be pressured, he's not going to jump ahead of the goal line and take the puck. So the goalie defense is taken out.
Right.
Now, the defenseman has to, A, deal with the fact that he's going to get nailed into the boards if he gets there first, or B, he gets, or C, excuse me, he gets beat to the puck, and the forecheck has already begun. And what happens is if you get the puck, dump the puck in, and you have the defenseman in chase position, that's effective. But you can do that, and you can have the speed of Josephson, Parise, Kovalchuk. Although Kovalchuk doesn't forecheck as much as the other guys.
Let me just interrupt for one quick second. It's I checked the pronunciation guide. Josephson.
Excuse me. Yeah. Josephson, Parise, you know, guys with speed as, or strong guys like Zubris, built like trucks, and guys like that. You get in on the forecheck, you take control of the puck immediately. And what the Devils do is they'll have two guys in on the forecheck right away. So it's not like one guy is in deep. Two guys are on the puck. And so you have to deal with that. Either you have to have a center back. Generally speaking, most teams want to have a defenseman probably in front of the net. Some will drop two guys back, like Buffalo will. But you'll need your center back to defend along the boards because your other defenseman will have to cover maybe the third guy in the zone, right? So you've immediately started to pressure on the defensive in the offensive zone. You're making the other team's center, for example, in this situation, like a Kopitar, like a Richards, like a Stoll, defend. So you're making him work hard along the boards. And working hard along the boards is a lot harder on your body than just skating around the middle of the ice.
Also, you're taking an opponent's skilled player,
yeah,
and you're making them, and you're sort of reducing the effect that their skill will have because they're playing so far away from the offensive zone.
That's more time in your own zone.
Right.
And you're driving defensemen into the boards a lot, too. So you're wearing them down for the
duration. Right. You're coming in hard, and that defenseman either has to make a bang-bang play on the puck to get it to his partner or up and around the zone, but he's going to get body contact, and he's going to get hit.
Richie, as it pertains to your article for overtime, and I think, you know, I recommend this article to everybody. It's a really good article.
Speaking of which, the article, Remus tweeted it out, so you can, if you follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, you'll see a link there to the article where you can read it in its entirety.
Yep.
And I think that, you mentioned it too, the Devils forwards are extremely talented, and that goes from the top line down to the fourth line. A line like Steve Bernier, Steven Gionta, and Ryan Carter can also play that because they've got some speed and they can get in there.
Well, Bernier's big, yep. Carter's strong, and Gionta's a hard worker.
And the thing is, a lot of people haven't been talking about this, but the Devils are a big team. And I look at a guy like Danius Zubris, and he's been fantastic. I've been a little bit hard on him over the years, you know, but he got a pretty big contract from the Devils, and you know, he's kind of, you know, been average at best in some seasons, but he's been very good on the forecheck, getting in the corners.
Well, you mentioned that fourth line right before, and let's use it as an example. I wrote the article, I think, after game 3 or game 4, and in game 5, as you'll remember, it's 3-3. So the Devils have a 3-0 lead, they blow it, it's 3-3 going into the third period. How did they score the fourth goal? Puck in the corner, Kovalchuk chases, Gionta supporting him, because it's two forecheckers, right? Gionta supports him, picks up the puck on the boards. Where does the puck go?
Front of the net.
To the third forward, who's cutting in deep.
Yep. Yeah.
And who? And Ryan Carter.
One-timer.
Pulls in. Yeah. That's exactly what the Devils are good at. And that's how they scored. And don't think the Rangers aren't aware of it. That's the thing about this. It's hard to stop. The puck's in deep. You got to get it. Your goalie can't play it. I mean, you know it's coming, and you can't stop it. And that's frustrating for a team.
Let me ask you this question. The Devils play... What is it about the Devils, the way they're built, that allows them to play the style, whereas other teams choose not to play the style? Because it seems, based on the way you've described it, it seems like a style that almost all teams in the league should employ.
You need to have the speed to be able to pursue on the forecheck. So if you get the puck in deep and you can't get to there.
Because if you're a little fleet of foot and you're sending three guys in deep, but the defender is getting to it quickly, you have an odd man break coming the other way.
It's funny, precisely, Drew. It. You know, and I think Richie would agree with this. It's almost like the New Jersey Devils style was the best possible style to combat the New York Rangers or a team like the Phoenix Coyotes. What they want,
or Philadelphia,
or the Philadelphia Flyers, what they want is they want to possess the puck and they want to sit back, and maybe less so Philadelphia, but the New York Rangers, you know, they want to sit back. And what I've realized about the way the New Jersey Devils have played is that they have shown that this style is a lot more effective than sitting back. And if you look at what we've been talking about this year,
exactly.
I mean, these are the two teams left standing aren't the Phoenix Coyotes and the New York Rangers and the Nashville Predators, those teams that like to trap, sit back, you know, take advantage of mistakes. Well, the Devils are taking advantage of mistakes, but they're creating those mistakes. Like Richie said, Ilya Kovalchuk's going in there, putting pressure when he has two other forwards supporting him. It's all about support. And the New Jersey Devils always have seem to have three forwards around the puck. And they almost, a lot of the time they're getting that puck. They're spending a lot of time in the opposing team's zone. And they're not letting anybody else really establish anything. New York Rangers were outplayed 5 out of 6 games. And the New York Rangers have some pretty talented players on their team. But when you're spending the entire time getting basically pestered by the New Jersey Devils every line, I mean, a fourth line like that, I mean, those are good players. But, you know, when you're outplaying, you know, a Hagelin, Gabrick, and Richards, I mean, you know, those are top-notch NHL players. But they've proven, you're right, Drew, any team can play that. But the Devils happen to have 9 really good forwards and, you know, not too bad fourth line that they can do it.
There's more keys to the forechecker, just to continue that, in terms of, I talk about the two forecheckers. But the third forechecker on the Devils goes far deeper into the zone, sometimes below the goal line, with 3 players below the goal line than most other teams do. So and he has the liberty to do that.
Generally speaking, doesn't this allow the Devils to be in a 3-on-2 position below the goal line, whereas they have 3 attackers and only two and a half defenders
sometimes
against them?
Sure. I mean, but also what happens is, Drew, is you defend 3-on-3, and then your risk of the 3-on-2 the other way is negated because these players are defending.
Right.
And you have the speed to get back. The speed doesn't only work one way. The speed works both ways. Another thing is, so they'll be pretty aggressive, but The key for the Devils is once the puck's in the zone is to keep it in the zone. So the third guy high, while he's not always high per se, he'll get in deep sometimes, he's always aware of the puck. And when the puck gets swung around the other side of the zone, the defenseman almost always pinches. And the Devils forwards know this. So the third forward knows, the puck gets swung around, I immediately skate back to the blue line, the defenseman's going to pinch and keep it in.
The spot that the defenseman has vacated so that he can come in and try and win the puck battle along the boards.
Speed and smarts are hard to teach, but used in the correct way, it makes it even harder to beat.
Let's look at this as it relates to the Los Angeles Kings. The Devils will likely still employ the same strategy. It's been their strategy all year round.
Yep.
Do the Kings have the wherewithal on defense to counteract this forechecking strategy? Are they better built, say, than the Rangers were in order to handle it?
They're bigger. I mean, Delzato and McDonough aren't the biggest guys. Girardi's big, Staal's big, but Staal's had a concussion. They weren't using Stroman. He's easy to push off the puck, and they didn't trust Bickle, a bigger guy, but they didn't trust Bickle, not a great puck mover or skater. The Kings are bigger. Mitchell's big, Doughty's big, Scuderi's built like a truck. Green and Green's a big guy. Martinez isn't small either. Voinov is not the most aggressive guy, but I mean they're a team built to better handle the Devils along the board. So the question is quickness.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. What's more important, the size of the defenseman to combat this forecheck, or the speed of the defenseman to win the initial puck battle, this race?
That's something based on this series. That's going to be something you have to watch and see. I think the size is going to be a big factor for the Kings. I think it's a bigger advantage for them than the speed here, to be honest. But I think it will be interesting to watch and see.
Right, and you know what? I mean, the LA Kings, maybe, you know, some of the veteran guys like Matt Green and Rob Scuderi, you know, maybe they're not the quickest, but those are veteran guys, and I think that the Devils aren't going to be as effective in doing that against the Rangers, who I believe are more tired. I think you guys would agree with that as well, but it's still going to pose them problems. And I think, you know, the Kings know this by now. They've been watching the Devils, and they have advanced scouting on this, so It will cause them problems, but I think the Kings also, they're the type of team, they can get out of their zone quickly. They've got really talented forwards. So, you know, Devils aren't gonna stop doing it, Drew, because obviously it's been working for them. But I think the Kings are going to be able to adjust maybe a little bit better than the Rangers did.
Well, it'll be an important matchup and an important chess, you know, part of the chess match that goes on in each and every game that you can watch for. Keep an eye on the Devils' forecheck versus the Kings' counteraction to the forecheck as potentially being one of the keys to success in the upcoming Stanley Cup Finals. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to try to answer the question of, is Marty Brodeur the best goaltender of all time? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Money slowly gets sapped up there. You know, Stepan and McDonough are going to be free agents at the same time. Well, then they're not going to be so cheap anymore off of their entry-level contracts. That's going to be a factor. And it's not easy to navigate the cap in this day and age and in a city that's going to spend up to the max. So
you have some concerns with their offense, and do they go to the free agent wire, and do they sign some of those guys? And the free agent wire is thin. Yeah, I don't know. I don't see Parise making a switch across the Hudson. And if that's the case, I mean, do they go after Ryan Suter? Well, I don't know if this is the team for him. I don't think that probably happens. So you're on the next level of players, and is there a player out there that can give them...
Is Rick Nash their answer?
And that's a question. But, I mean, they gave him a great offer to the Columbus, and they didn't do it. Why would Columbus suddenly do it now?
They got to drop someone off the books if they're bringing in Rick Nash.
Two things. One, it's pronounced McElraith.
Okay, there you go. I don't know why it's a Mac if it's MC. Wouldn't it be Mick? But anyways.
Yeah, it's M-A-K according to the pronunciation. Okay. So McElraith, Dylan McElraith. Second of all, this question. Can the Rangers play the same style of play that they had this year?
I don't think so. I think if you want to win, you have to pump it up a bit and score a little bit more. But
do they have to make it easier on themselves?
Yeah, I mean, even strength on the power play. They need to improve their second power play unit. They need to be better at even strength. They need to add a little bit, maybe more speed up front. You have some guys who aren't the fastest players, right? Brad Richards isn't the best skater. Brian Boyle's improved his skating, but he's not the fastest. Mike Rupp's pretty slow. So guys like Haglund create speed and things like that, but they could use a little bit more speed up front. I think Gabrick's been, restricted in his ability to create offense there. You look at their cap space for next year, Drew, and I think that's an important factor here we need to include. Right now, they have 14 players signed, and they only have $16 million in cap space. If you want to get 22, 23 players signed, yeah, you do the math there.
You're going to have to pick up some bargain basement
guys.
That's
about $2 million a player, right?
Yeah.
Approximately. You're going to sign Delzato. How much is he going to cost? If you're going to sign, are you going to bring back Fedotenko? And then you're going to need to fill the other one or two defense spots. There goes a couple more million. And you're going to want to bring in a forward who can make some money. Okay, but then you have Stepan on the deal that you have to sign the next year. And then you have Haglund that you have to sign after the next year. They have money to bring in a bigger-time forward. But the question is that forward available via free agency? Probably not. And then, if so, are you going to maybe trade some of your prospects for that forward? Maybe it's Rick Nash, but maybe it's somebody else. And I think what they have to do is probably, maybe trade a prospect or two and get a player that can take advantage of Richards and Gabrick in their near the ends of their really, really effective years. Because if not, then you have big money on the books. Not that they can't throw it in the minors like they did with Redden, but big money is in the books that isn't as effective.
Rick Nash and Zach Parise are exactly what they need, but the only problem is a lot of teams need that.
Yeah.
And I think that they're going to have trouble getting those players with, 10 other teams making... There's going to be 29 teams, but 10 teams mm-hmm. making serious bids.
Absolutely. A couple things before we go to break. Our colleague Trevor, who's over on one of our sister stations today, says Tim Chevalier is the best goaltender of all time. I think there's a little...
And Trevor is right. Yeah, he's right about that.
Absolutely. And congratulations to Paul and David. They both won the gift cards to Carbone coal-fired pizza, so they'll be able to enjoy a nice night out. Stay tuned in the final hour. We're going to have some more giveaways to take care of. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final hour coming up after these commercial messages.